welcome back to episode 163. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. How are you?
Very well. Well, before we get into our main topic, I thought we'd go over the week's events, the more COVID follies. New York City, of course. New York City to implement quarantine checkpoints at key entry points. New York City will implement COVID-19 quarantine checkpoints at key entry points to the city to ensure that travelers coming from 35 states on New York's travel advisory comply with the 14-day mandate issued by the state in June, Mayor Bill de Blasio said on Wednesday. Travelers coming in from those states will be given information about the quarantine and be reminded that it is required, not optional, de Blasio told a news briefing. He added that under certain circumstances, fines for not observing the quarantine order could be as high as $10,000. So I don't know how they enforce that. You're out of state, you leave. I can they can collect them that, but it's even legal. I'm sure someone give me a $10,000 fine, I'd definitely challenge it. But, I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, if you want to go to New York just for the weekend, you got a quarantine for 14 days, some flea bag motel, it's ridiculous. Again, all this over a lousy cold. It's basically a naked power grab. They're just getting everyone prepared for almost like a Sovietization of the country where you have to have internal passports, and that's what this idea of immunity passports is all about. And also New York, the governor Andrew Cuomo, calls on wealthy New Yorkers to come back to the city. I'll buy you a drink, he says. New York governor pushes back against calls to raise taxes on the wealthy. They're not coming back. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo urged wealthy New Yorkers to return to Manhattan as the coronavirus is now under control to assist the city with the financial burden caused by the pandemic. Of course, yeah.
I just wanted to interject that this is... This is just stagecraft. They're just trying to create the illusion that the virus is what drove the people out. The virus did nothing. The virus was only basically killing old people who were being exposed to people with infectious diseases in their retirement homes. The reason the wealthy left is because of the violence that was associated with the BLM protests. Yeah. And I know this for an absolute fact because so many of them moved to Santa Barbara. I talked to a couple of them and they all said the same thing. Mm-hmm. They wanted to be safe. It wasn't from the virus, it was from the violence. And the reason that Cuomo and de Blasio are going through this little song and dance is just to, it's like you say, to help with the Sovietization of the country. They're given the impression that, look, you know, we're really trying to behave reasonably. We're not trying to create a slave camp. Come on back in. But at the same time, they're making it impossible. They're setting, you know, the idea that someone would come to New York with the idea that we may have to quarantine for 14 days. This is ludicrous. Mm-hmm. So no one is going to come back. They are shutting the country down to travel. Mm-hmm. That is the goal here. And there's a lot of, you know, just song and dance that they're kind of creating around the fact. But this is what they're trying to do, Tim. They're trying to lock us down. Because movement equals the ability to, you know, try to defend yourself, mm-hmm. try to go someplace else where there's some stronghold. They're trying to lock people down because eventually they're going to get around to the starvation, process. And, you know, we've been talking about this, and I get emails from people wondering if I'm, you know, exaggerating or being an alarmist. Neither. The fact is, this is a project. This is not real. The illusion of the virus is there just to create the plausibility so that no one can see what's obvious. It hides people. It hides it from people that they are simply locking us in place, getting us used to the fact we can't move, getting rid of the airlines. Now, with this passport business to get into New York, they're even starting to quarantine off areas where you can't come in. This is going to end up with people trapped in the cities, and then the food supply is going to unfortunately go away, and then you'll see what the real purpose of all of this is depopulation.
Yeah, and these are legitimizing the idea of you being able to the state or police, you know, police or wherever enforcement agency is there to keep you to stay there, not go anywhere. And this is done under the guise of this fake pandemic, which again they're saying people left because of fear of the virus. No, they left because of the mayhem and the rioting that was permitted by the authorities. Yeah. Out west, you're part of the woods. L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti to cut water and power off homes hosting large parties. Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti said Wednesday he will authorize the city to shut off power and water services at homes and other private venues that are accused of hosting unpermitted parties and gatherings amid the coronavirus pandemic. Accused. I'm authorizing the city to shut off Los Angeles Department of Water and Power Services in the egregious cases in which houses, businesses, and other venues are hosting unpermitted large gatherings. Well, what's egregious? The mayor told reporters. These large parties are unsafe and can cost Angelinos their lives. Now, I'm looking at a picture from late May or June where Mayor Eric Garcetti is shoulder to shoulder with what I would guess are Black Lives Matter protesters. He's not wearing a mask. He is literally rubbing against other protesters. There's a camera in his face. You know, where does he get off telling people they should socially distance and not, you know, this gathering is a former crowd of any party would be most likely. So this is absurd. But starting on Friday night, if LAPD responds and verifies that a large gathering is occurring at a property and we see the properties offending time and time again, they provide notice and initiate a process to request the DWP to shut off services within the next 48 hours, he said. Now, I don't know where he gets the authority to do that. If they've paid their bill, you know, where do they get off turning water services?
So, I mean, think about it. I mean, basically, he's creating a law. He's not the legislature. He's supposed to be the mayor. Well, he's creating a law which has the power basically to physically damage the citizen. I mean, if you take away water and power, I mean, some people need these things for basically to survive, right? And this is being done without any kind of a process, without any kind of legal process. It's just, if we identify you, you know, we will have some means by which we're going to do it. There's no legal process that's been the public can participate in to basically contest whether or not this legal power is in existence to defend themselves against harm from having water and power cut out. I mean, this is, again, this is just part of the lockdown. The guy is a lifetime actor, Garcetti, who is trying to basically incarcerate the city, right? Can't move, can't get out. You can't have the right of assembly. And you know, Tim, I mean, we're 6 months into this, which was supposed to be, 3 weeks to flatten the curve?
Yeah, 2 weeks, actually.
Okay. Now, if you look at the fatalities in California, there's nothing there really beyond even a routine flu season.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this whole rationale that they're giving, that they are trying to help us, they're out for our interest, and is just, I mean, it just falls apart. It just can't possibly be rational. But the media is controlled to the extent that the damage of the lockdown, the psychological, the physical, and of course the political damage, because as you can see by Garcetti's proclamation, the Constitution is gone at this point, right? That is never discussed. Our media does not bring this up. They will simply talk about the latest deaths from the disease, and how certain people are not behaving themselves, and by doing so, by not wearing their masks and whatnot, they're selfishly endangering other people. It's just, the media is just a round-the-clock psychological structure that is making sure that people don't contest the government rationale and wonder about whether or not there's an ulterior and malevolent motive for all this.
Yeah, someone needs to have the electricity and power and water cut off to the mayor's office and mansion in L.A. And he needs to be cut off. You know.
Yeah.
So it's almost like what you need to get like a militia or some sort of latter day, you want someone like the Magnificent Seven to come in and deal with these people and get rid of them and go.
And, you know, as far as like the COVID follies, I wanted to mention Melbourne and Sydney in Australia, because this is really where it's all going. Last Sunday, they introduced what they call stage four. And bear in mind, I mean, no one is dying in Australia. And it is just virtually ludicrous, because their mortality levels are exactly the same as they have been for 5 years. There's nothing unusual happening. But they have the mass hysteria of the potential in the minds of so many people that they're actually accepting these draconian restrictions. But let me just read them to you. So they have a curfew between 8 p.m. and 5 a.m. You're permitted 1 hour of exercise outside your house. Only one member of your household can shop, and only once a day. If you want to leave, you need a special permit. Okay, there is the lockdown. Okay, par excellent. You've got to get a permit if you want to leave the suburban district that you're in. You are not permitted to leave the metropolitan area. So it's a full lockdown. Okay, you need a permit to go from one suburb. Think of the boroughs in New York, right? Mm-hmm. But you cannot leave the metropolitan area. You are absolutely stuck. Now, the fines are enormous. $5,000 per offense. A repeat offense is $20,000. The Australians don't have any money saved up. Believe me, this would just bankrupt a normal family. Parliament has been suspended indefinitely. Courts are closed, and the Constitution has been basically formally suspended through the chain of events. So you now have literally a slave camp. Mm-hmm. I mean, there isn't a lot of difference between this and, say, Camp Irene during the Boer Wars.
So Australia is back to being a penal colony.
Australia is back to being a penal colony, and the population is so brain dead, so incapable of thought, and so confused by the mass hysteria and the panic that they've been able to interject at this point, the media has been, that they are not rioting.
Yeah, I thought Australians had a reputation of being disagreeable and stubborn.
Well, unfortunately, they are showing themselves to be docile and obedient, and this is, and this to the extent that it's just dangerous, because when you accept for literally something that hasn't had any more effect in the nation after 5 months than the flu, when you accept that you cannot leave the metropolitan area, that you're only permitted outside your house for an hour at a time. And let me tell you something, Tim, every one of these things is going to be here in the United States within 6 or 7 months. I guarantee you. All of these requirements, because you'll see that in October, November, they'll bring in the dreaded second wave, which again will just be mass hysteria. Mm-hmm. The media will promote it. They'll reinfect a few retirement homes. They'll have a few body counts. Healthy people won't be getting sick, but they will use the media to whip up the mass hysteria, and then they will bring in the hard edge lockdown. And this is the condition under which the American Holodomor will take place. This is how they're going to do it. They'll get you incrementally used to not leaving your house, and then they will have control over the food supply. The government will take control of it. At first, there will be food, but then, amazingly, over time, there'll be less and less, and then over time, there'll be less and less people.
Yeah, that's, it's a never result if you shut the economy down. If you don't let people earn a living, they won't be able to live.
Of course.
And you can't just write, $600 a week relief checks to these things, because at the end of the day, the economy has to produce something. So you just can't paper it over with funny money. You can't, pretend to pay people and have the people pretend, or at least in the Soviet Union, they pretended to work. And yet here, they're being forced not to work. They're locking the economy down with these phased reopenings and closings and openings and closings and these restrictions. And it's just a question of what are people willing to tolerate? And as long as the mind control works, they're willing to tolerate, let themselves starve to death, apparently. it's something to behold. I mean, Fauci says America can stand another lockdown. Now, I don't think Fauci's missed a paycheck or a meal, nor is he late on his mortgage payment if he has a mortgage. And I suspect that if this lockdown, when it first implemented back in March, would have coincided with each government official, each government employee not getting a paycheck, it wouldn't have lasted, no way it would have lasted longer than 2 weeks if it had been implemented at all. But that's not the case. But the thing is, even those who are getting paychecks, it doesn't mean anything if you're getting paid if nothing's being produced. So if you're sitting at home pretending to work on, you know, working from home, no. It's not going to, so you're sit back and you're thinking, I'm doing fine, I don't care. You're not immune to this because it's an economic.
You cannot take the face-to-face retail component out of the U.S. economy without the whole thing collapsing.
No, and it collapses the objective, yeah. But if,
because it's too large a fraction.
Yeah.
The restaurants, the bars, the small retail stores, it's a large fraction, and it's a huge fraction of the employment, which is, again, it's part of the centrifugal movement of funds and that an economy needs. When you take this out, as it has been, it's just a question of time before the whole economy collapses, going all the way up, even to the world of financialization, it'll just go to zero.
Mm-hmm.
And so it might take a couple years to get there, but you'll see that, particularly come October the 1st, when a lot of the fake money support for businesses and employees goes away, and they don't have a program in place yet. If they don't, you'll see just massive, real panic.
Yeah.
Because now you'll be getting there. You'll see the food lines will be miles long immediately. I'm talking about this coming July. I'm talking about less than, like 60 days, you're going to see really, really long food lines immediately, because the government is really starting to move and subsidizing and taking control of almost all of the food production.
Well, the thing is, you have a president who's either feckless or clueless or confused or in on it, and he's letting these wolves and jackals in the states destroy their economies. Why is this the case? Why is this being permitted, allowed? And you have to look at these people in the states and the governments as sort of, like I've said this before, they're not of us. They're alien agents, and they need to be routed, from office. Some, I don't know what agency there is for that, something like a militia going to store and arresting them,
putting
people's tribunal and dispensing with them as they should, because they are treasonous. They're a treasonous bunch, and they no longer have any legitimacy. Their only legitimacy is the constitutional office they hold. And once they vitiate the Constitution, they have no legitimacy. They're just there.
Exactly. When in Sydney, when they formally suspended the Constitution, basically through the chain of events by which the courts and the parliament mm-hmm. were shut down, the citizens should have simply organized themselves, marched on the Capitol building, and removed them from office.
Well, apparently this has happened in Albania and Serbia.
Yeah.
And you saw, you saw what happened in Germany over the last weekend. Hundreds of thousands came out and protested. Germany, of all places, the most mind-controlled, politically correct population, there are signs of life. But, of course, it wasn't reported on. If the New York Times said it was 17,000, they're all like conspiracy theorists and neo-Nazis. Well, I saw hundreds of thousands of neo-Nazis, if that's the case.
Yeah, well, when the New York Times brands someone as a neo-Nazi, that's a person I want to meet.
Yeah, I know.
Because they are just, without a doubt, the most malevolent, lying rattlesnake. You know, that whole media structure that they have is just disgusting and needs to be exposed. And we have to do it because people cannot think clearly.
No, because people are dying, and they are. I mean,
you're right. Listen, the suicide rate is through the roof.
Robert Redfield talked about it. They said the deaths from despair, are more than COVID now.
Of course they are, and this is just the tip of the iceberg. Because think of all the medical practice that is not taking place. Think of the depression. Think of the domestic stress, mm-hmm. right? Think of the abuse of children because they don't have anywhere to, the parents have nowhere to put them. I mean, the misery, death, and poverty that the lockdowns have already brought about are what, 20, 30 times more than anything that the disease could possibly affect us with. So the whole argument that this thing is, you know, we have to protect you from the disease, that's why we're going to lock you down and starve you to death, it is just, it can only be maintained with a round-the-clock propaganda dose coming through the, you know, the legacy media.
Yeah, I mean, it's so obvious.
Yeah,
it's not, these people aren't, like I said before, they're not that stupid. So it's malicious. You know, our friend Fauci, you know, saying, "Well, we can take another lockdown." Yeah, right. Okay, because like, he knows, he's an expert. Apparently, he's, you know, he's a bureaucrat. You know, he's a lab technician, glorified lab technician, and a bad and fraudulent one at that. You know, but he said recently, I think it was this past week or the week before, late maybe, perhaps, Dr. Anthony Fauci suggested that people wear eye goggles or face shields as an added measure of protection against contracting the coronavirus, according to a report. If you have goggles or an eye shield, you should use it, Fauci, 79, the top U.S. infectious disease expert, told ABC News. When asked if eye protection will become a formal recommendation at some point, he said, it might if you really want to provide protection against mucosal surfaces. Wow, he said, he used the word mucosal, so I'm intimidated now. Fauci, a member of the White House of Pandemic Task Force and director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, explained the rationale for the measure. You have mucosa in the nose, mucosa in the mouth, but you also have mucosa in the eye, he said. Theoretically, you should protect all mucosal surfaces, so if you have goggles or an eye shield, you should use it. Now, think about what he's suggesting. People wearing a mask and goggles as they casually go about their day, going shopping, walking on the street. Now, at this point, the public should stand up and go, okay, BS, we've been had. I'm calling the whole thing. We're not doing this anymore. That's ridiculous. I mean,
oh, it's coming, Tim. Let me tell you, in California, the local politicians and the emails they give to the citizens, mm-hmm. Which I receive, are now saying cloth masks don't work. And it's because you're able to respirate viruses through it, and thereby you're a potential infector and a biological weapon. So that you need a mask that contains the virus inside your breathing space. Now, what he's talking—they're talking about respirators.
Yeah, right. That's what exterminators use.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. This is what they're talking about. And the thing is that I absolutely guarantee you that they will attempt to get the public to do this, because
I want them to, because that's more of a chance that the whole thing will come.
Exactly. At some point, you're hoping that the public will rebel. But the reason that they will do this, and it's almost a certainty, is because once they've done that, they don't have to worry about freedom of speech, because you cannot communicate unless you're good at sign language with people around you once you've got the full respirator on. Believe me.
So let's survey the situation. The government shut down the economy, closed schools, effectively banned church services and peaceful assembly while permitting mostly peaceful rioting, you know. They've thrown tens of millions into unemployment and poverty, suspended cultural life, you know, concerts, weddings, festivals, fairs, reunions, you know, things that make life worth living, and proposed and implemented totalitarian measures, supposedly all in response to a virus that has a 99.76% survival rate for the majority of the public and is asymptomatic or causes mild general cold symptoms. So COVID is not a public health matter because it's not a threat to the general public. I mean, when you subtract, I mean, Robert F. Kennedy, his website, I read that report where if you subtract comorbidity from the official mortality rate count, the mortality rate drops more than 90%. So it's effectively non-existent. I mean, whatever reality is to it, it's not there. It's not what they say it is. It's like, you know, Al-Qaeda wasn't what they said it was or is, nor was Osama bin Laden. So, effectively, you know, the whole thing was kind of a hologram.
So if you subtract the comorbidity, mm-hmm. mortality of the disease is less than any other cause of a fatality you can name. Mm-hmm. You could not name something. I mean, maybe wasp stings, black widow bite. I mean, there is just nothing that would actually be less lethal than COVID if you subtract comorbidity. So the argument that we're receiving is sophistry, and it's propaganda. The public is literally just brain dead at this point.
Yeah, I think it's one big mass IQ test, and
we're failing.
The public's
and we have to get the public to realize that, you know, that the hysteria over the threat of the COVID has been created for the purpose of confusing you, so that you don't notice you've been put into a slave camp beyond anything that the Soviet Union ever produced.
Yeah, and I don't know what it takes people to wake up to this. They'll allow this to happen, and basically it's compliance. If you don't comply, it goes away because they can't enforce it. So it's a mind control game like it always is. And there was a video I saw, I think it was the New Mexico governor, a lady down there. She was all upset because people were leaving the state, coming back in the state and going back to their affairs. And she was just outraged that they were doing this because of the disease. And she's using all the rhetoric, all the, you know, the propaganda, all the, transparent lies that people were actually going. But the one thing I got is she was like flailing her arms and she was powerless because people weren't obeying her. And that's what people have to do. These edicts, these rules, if you will, whatever they have no force of law. And effectively, there's no enforcement because they don't have the most of the cops won't even enforce it.
What cops?
Yeah,
they've defunded. Again, this is something people are not. This isn't something you'd see in the mainstream media, but over 15 cities have already started the process of defunding the police departments. Seattle, where the summer of love is not going too well. You remember when the mayor of Seattle suggested that the autonomous zone would usher in another, summer of love.
Yeah.
And the violence is just through the roof. I got an interesting phone call from my eyes on the ground in Seattle, just this really righteous individual who he says that there is violence everywhere in Seattle and it is not being reported. He says the local media is not covering events, and he says that the violence is moving to places that it never was before. Mm-hmm. I mean, before it would be just inside the, kind of ghetto areas and where the fentanyl brigade were living. But he says now, no, it's starting to creep out. And needless to say, businesses and anyone who has like the capacity are leaving Seattle, so you're going to be left with basically a gigantic autonomous zone, which will be locked down. I mean, just think about how easy it'll be then to liquidate all the individuals inside of it. You know, we've talked many times about how the workers' paradise that the fentanyl brigade are being offered, the idea that particularly like young, disillusioned African-American males and mentally ill female whites, that are like Antifa types. Once they have the autonomous zone set up and they will continue to lock it down, just like they did to Sydney. What do you think these people, how long will these people last? I mean, they wouldn't even make it 2 weeks on their own. They have to be maintained because they don't have the capacity to take care of themselves. So this is kind of, you can start to see more and more the plan, the chaos driving out those that are, basically have resources, intellectual and financial. They'll get those later on, but the low hanging fruit. That's who they're going after first. And I wanted to mention something. This shows you a good data point to show you how really malevolent our media is. Is there was a survey of African Americans, and they found that 80% of them. Okay, national survey, 80% did not want the police departments defunded. 80%, overwhelming. And an overwhelming majority wasn't overwhelmed, but wasn't quite as large, but wanted more police patrols, right? And of course, this goes hand in hand with the fact that half of the African-American owned businesses have announced that they cannot reopen. Okay, so this is then the reality of the situation of the African-American. They are, believe me, they're gonna be the first ones to start feeling starvation. And the workers' paradise that Black Lives Matter is basically offering to them, right, and to the disillusioned youths of America, it's just straight into the slave camp for these guys. They are, their only use is just to destroy the cities because they're strongholds, to destroy the businesses because they can produce freedom and enable people to resist. And once they're, believe me, once they have been done their purpose, you think the government's going to maintain them for what, pets?
Yeah, well, yeah, you can only loot once.
Yeah.
You know, so so it doesn't last too long when you do that. So,
no.
You know, so, well, now we agreed for a main topic, we talk about the war on free speech, particularly the Jewish war on free speech and free expression. How this is unfolded or been implemented throughout the years. The way it implements depends on what level of power, what level of Jewish privilege existed in our society. Because for the longest time, Jews would trumpet freedom of speech, but when they got into power, they started advocating censorship and then lecture us on the danger of free speech and talking about hate speech. We can cite, how in the past, if you were a public figure or you spoke against Jewish interest or policies that Jews perceived to be in the interest, you could be ostracized, found without any contracts, work, you lose your show if you were a journalist or something, but also in publishing. But also now we're seeing things like deplatforming, and also people losing financial services like PayPal or credit card services, transaction services. Obviously YouTube and Google, they partner with the ADL. They more or less have commissars in there monitoring content. And of course, the past couple of years has been a huge purge from those platforms. The real push for hate speech is largely a Jewish thing. Basically, hate speech is speech that the ADL doesn't like or what Jewish organizations don't agree with. That's the situation right now. Now, how would you characterize the Jewish war on free speech? Its history, and how would you?
Okay, it's It is they have control large controls of media outlets. Mm-hmm. And they then it isn't, I would say, best characterized as a direct attempt to stop people from speaking. What happens is they control what the story is and what stories are released. I mean, it's not that there aren't people trying to tell the truth. I mean, a good example would be the New York Times with the coverage of the Holodomor. Okay, I don't know if you recall, but Walter Duranty was the New York Times correspondent. He dominated the news story. He then created fictitious stories that disputed that these rumors regarding starvation in Ukraine, were true. He said, no, this isn't the case. And he had like some, coverage of just fake stuff, right? Where people were, he would get interviews with people saying, no, we have food. Well, later on, it turned out that, yeah, he admitted, the stories were, what I was really trying to do is I didn't want communism to be given kind of a black eye. I was so worried about, hate speech against Stalin because he thought Stalin was such a good guy. So this is kind of the basic structure, is that it's propaganda. So if you look at how they handled the experiment at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, right, they just created a story that the public was given. So this is just, kind of what we're up against is that the reason why I think it's important, really important right now, is that with the lockdown, what they do is they produce stories about the dangers of COVID, but you never hear analysis of the destruction that the lockdown is doing. You see what I mean? Now, when you look at who's controlling these media platforms, well, I mean, in Google and Facebook case, it's pretty clear. I mean, and so going to, like the networks, CBS, ABC, NBC, you just have such an overwhelming Jewish presence in both the ownership and in the news presenters that they're able to basically create an ethnic perspective, which is propaganda that defends them from basically participation in evil. I mean, another example would be how the plight of the Palestinian is represented in our media. The Palestinian case is only presented as terrorism. I mean, they've created this the fictional terrorist as bomber, as a kind of icon that everyone sees whenever the issue of Israel's behavior vis-a-vis the Palestinians is brought up. So free speech is, clearly is under attack right now. Very specifically, you look at, YouTube, and look at Google, look at Facebook. Obviously, the algorithms are now just mind control. Free speech is being restricted. But it's interesting. If you look at Google, for example, they change the algorithm so that what you're looking for becomes, in fact, propaganda. Mm-hmm. No longer able to access, popular websites. The algorithms now are just engaged in mind control so that they will take you to something that will basically convince you, of the position that they want. So this is what we've been suffering with, is the creation of propaganda and the ability, because of the control over the media, to not let any of contesting, or other kinds of information get to the public. So this is how free speech has been destroyed, and we didn't know it. We just have been trained in a particular understanding of history and a particular belief in the legitimacy of newspapers, and we didn't understand the concept of lifetime actor, that people could be just lying to us, And so all of these things have worked to create just this moment where the ability of the public to honestly discuss the potential catastrophes that this lockdown are going to have been taken away from us. So that's how free speech, has been wrecked in this regard, is that inside our minds, obviously the public is not thinking clearly because they don't have the right information, the right grammar to use. And this is being reinforced every day by a controlled media. And it's going to lead to the kind of catastrophes that I believe that we've been worried about now for ever since the lockdowns began.
Well, control of the media, controlling the narratives is important in controlling interpretation of history, therefore controlling the present and therefore the future, as George Orwell talked about in 1984. But what's happened is, I think if you follow the Jewish ascendancy in the West in the 19th century in the wake of Jewish emancipation, but also the rise of the House of Rothschild and other, Warburg and Schiff, these financial, you know, oligarchs, if you will, moguls, they use that wealth to buy up a lot of the media, like the Ox family in the New York Times. As a Jewish family, had made a lot of their money in the slave trade, Pulitzer. These are Jewish families that control the publishing, therefore the interpretation of events. So they're able to more or less make the default, make the Jewish version of history the default position of history through their narratives, and they could silence any views that conflict with that. And they could do that through controlling the publishing houses, the media, then eventually electronic media. And then if you had anyone that challenged it, say, like whether it's, you know, Germar Rudolph, the German scientist, chemist, with historian David Irving, or Ernst Zundel, the activist, well, they were well, they were jailed. So, you know, right. The state eventually, if, you know, ultimately they're willing to resort to that. But before that, what they'll do is they'll practice other things, like they'll ignore you or silence you or blackball you or ostracize you, so you can't earn a living for what you're doing. But basically, they effectively control speech by controlling the narrative and what's considered accepted, what's considered you could talk about in polite society. So at times it can be rather subtle and indirect, almost invisible, which is the most effective way if you're exercising power, is you're invisible to the general public, therefore you're not really accountable. But this current wave of censorship, you can't take it other than being a Jewish operation. It was E. Michael Jones who said, it's impossible to understand the current wave of internet censorship unless we see it as a Jewish operation. Jewish privilege today finds itself in the primary expression of terms like hate speech and anti-Semitism, which have become weapons wielded to destroy people. The term hate speech is a creation of the Anti-Defamation League. Like the analogous term anti-Semitism, hate speech is any utterance Jews at organizations like the ADL find offensive. So there was a time when Jews posed as being advocates of free speech and free expression. 60 years ago, you had people like Leo Pfeffer, who claimed that Jews favored free speech. And they did at the time because free speech and free expression was used as a weapon to undermine anti-obscenity laws, promote abortion, and also undermine the moral code, the morality of the culture. Moral anarchy and social anarchy was imposed, a new code was imposed. And of course, the new code is political correctness, which is known as hate speech. And as Gail Altman says, that political correctness, hate speech are Jewish creations. So we have that. But basically, if the mechanism is financial control, control the media, then control the narrative, then you can exert that influence, the muscle, if you will, to be able to control things. And that's what we see with the imposition of hate speech and other laws, and the activism of the ADL going into outfits like Google, and, you know, being able to control YouTube, and basically they've installed agents or commissars in these social media companies, these platforms, to regulate content. And what they don't like, they just define as hate speech, and they can you know, ban it. They can take it off and shut down that expression. You have to understand the birth of some of these organizations, like the birth of the ADL. I mean, the Anti-Defamation League was created in the wake of the Leo Frank lynching in 1915. Leo Frank was a man convicted of raping and murdering a 13-year-old girl in 1913 in Atlanta, Georgia. And what happened was the organized jury bribed the governor to commute the sentence. The people were so outraged that they took Leo Frank and lynched him, and more or less carried out the sentence that he was given during trial. And at this point, the South became a target for Jewish activism. But it's interesting that that's the source origins of the ADL. And the ADL has always been used as sort of it uses its influence in the media to cover up the crimes for various powerful Jews. Whether it's Leo Frank, they weren't successful in that. Legally, they were, though. But people like Meyer Lansky or Mo Dalitz, these Jewish gangsters of the 20th century, the ADL was used to more or less ward off any real criminal investigation of these, because in order to investigate these people, it was considered anti-Semitism. So the term anti-Semitism is a weapon they used to shut down free speech to the extent that anyone's engaging in any criticism of Jewish organizations or Jewish activism or policies carried out by Jews or the Jewish state like Israel. So, but of course, you can't take that out of the context of the events of the 20th century, particularly the Second World War and the narrative that came out of that war, which was the Holocaust narrative, because it was at that point that anti-Semitism became a powerful weapon to be used against someone. They could be ostracized. And it was Benjamin Ginsberg, in his book, The Fatal Embrace, talks about one of the methods by which the Jews would practice censorship was a thing called dynamic silence. And basically it was their control of the media and high finance, which they could then control what was being talked about in the media. And this was, he writes, says, the American Jewish community developed a strategy called dynamic silence to combat the activities of anti-Semitic and anti-war Gerald K. Smith. Working together, officials of the American Jewish Committee, the American Jewish Congress, and the ADL would approach the publishers of major newspapers and owners of radio stations in cities where Smith had scheduled appearances to ask that Smith be given no coverage whatsoever. If newspapers and radio stations failed to cooperate on a voluntary basis, Jewish organizations were usually able to secure their compliance by threatening boycotts by Jewish advertisers. The strategy of dynamic silence was extremely effective in suppressing Smith and other right-wing anti-Semites, as he calls them. And of course, there are other figures like Dorothy Thompson, who was a trailblazing lady journalist in the 1940s and 50s. And she became very critical of what was going on in Palestine in the late 1940s during the birth of the Israeli state, during the Nabka and the terrorist tactics that the Irgun or Haganah and the Zionists were using. And it was at this point that this nationally renowned journalist lost her nationally syndicated radio show and her column. And she was more or less ostracized from the business. And so this is how you control the narrative, by just more or less organizing a boycott or working behind the scenes to conspire against people who are, again, countering the narrative or criticizing policies or critiquing the policies.
Yeah, and you can see, Tim, how difficult and how important it's going to be to break this down, because believe me, this force will be used to prevent people from understanding the reality of the lockdown. Mm-hmm. There is no question that this force will be brought to bear just everywhere to prevent people from thinking about the future with no food, for example. Mm-hmm. And so they will, you know, the media is under very close control right now. I think the control of the media is just extraordinary. It's really been exposed through this, the whole lockdown, and how they've been able to keep people from, keep the different media types from even talking about it. It's actually better, in my opinion, than the lockdown of the media that occurred following 9/11. So they've really taken over all of these little, small papers and everything. We really have to be bold in our exposure of the situation we're facing. Mm-hmm. We have to be bold. We have to tell people, look, you have to stop using your normal media outlets for information. You just have to stop. It's just a propaganda device. Can't you see that this media that you believe in, and this, you know, basis of history that they're trying to tell you and what's going on, has been completely malevolent during the whole lockdown? You were asking earlier, like, you know, when are, you know, people going to wake up to, you know, when you see such draconian structures going on all around them? Well, I don't know, but I hope it happens before we all starve to death.
Yeah, and of course, the lockdown was a pretext for the bailout, which empowered a company called BlackRock, which is owned by Larry Fink. And of course, he's probably buddies with Steve Mnuchin, and they're all tribe members. You can't discount that. Now, if you look at the level of Jewish privileges, you've got to ask yourself one thing, is that there are 26 states that passed legislation, anti-BDS legislation. That's the boycott, divestment, and sanction movement that's there to penalize the Israeli state for its policies. As many as 26 states passed official law. I mean, they actually passed laws that made it illegal to support that if you were a government contractor or worked for the government. There was a case in Texas where there was hurricane relief, that in order to get a hurricane relief check, you had to promise not to support the BDS movement. Now, how is that relevant? Now, why would that even be in the laws? In Hungary, there was a law that was passed through the parliament there. It wasn't signed by the president, but it made it a 2-year prison term for anyone publicly to insult a Jew. Now, insulting people is nice.
Well, gee, that's a little
unreasonable. That seems a little extreme, don't you think? You know, so we have these laws. I think last year Congress passed 69 separate laws specifically benefiting Israel. Of course, President Donald Trump himself signed a law that would penalize colleges if there was BDS activism. They would withhold federal funds for these things. And there's Alan Dershowitz there behind him smiling as president signed. You know, Alan Dershowitz has been in the news lately. He's apparently keeps his underwear on when he gets massages. But this is a good example. Alan Dershowitz in the 1970s he had such an expansive interpretation of freedom of speech that it covered pornography and it covered obscenity. But now here we are in 2020 and the First Amendment doesn't cover political speech. If it's criticizing a certain group or challenging the interest or these perceived interests of a certain group. So it's just that bad. I mean, it's, but it's more subtle than that. You have these laws. Of course, we have the laws in Europe about Holocaust denial or revisionism, you know, where now there's activism now to make it continental wide through the European Union to make challenging or questioning Holocaust illegal. Through the European Union, they're trying to do this. This guy Moshe Kantor is a Russian oligarch who emigrated. Now he's head of the European Jewish Congress, who's advocating for this. And so they're trying to make it a continental-wide crime to challenge Jewish history and interpretation. So a lot of this is, question the self-serving sort of lachrymose history that Jews teach about their past, about them always being the victims and not providing any context for, you know, what they've experienced. There was an article, a series of articles written by Andrew Joyce about this called Secure Tolerance, the Jewish Plan to Permanently Silence the West. And I urge everyone to go read them. It's in three parts at the Occidental Quarterly, or Occidental Review, rather, Andrew Joyce. And he writes, we could consider, for example, the manipulation of culture so that even certain speech is not illegal and carries no legal repercussions. It nevertheless leads to the loss of employment, the destruction of education opportunities, and the dissolving one's relationships. This is a form of cultural self-censorship involving modification of an in-group standards that has demonstrably Jewish origins. Soft censorship can take the form of socioeconomic prophylaxis. Take, for example, the recent initiative of the U.S. State Department to initiate a drive to engage in the global promotion of philo-Semitic attitudes. I really don't believe that this will play out in the manner the State Department hopes, and I watch this with interest as to precisely what the mythologies of this policy will be. But you're right, he's right about the point is that just by controlling the parameters of what's acceptable public discourse, you can affect free speech and free expression because people fear the ramifications. Again, this is a group which denies that they organize, and that the denial itself is a product of collective organization by them.
Yeah, I mean, they would never directly confront someone and say, shut up, you can't say this. Mm-hmm. What they do is they maneuver around the individual to make sure that no one will listen to him and that he is financially and politically shunted so that he doesn't have the chance to say it again. Mm-hmm. So the way they control free speech is clever. And it's harder for the public to see. I mean, that the way they attack it is designed to be hard for the public to see. I am hoping that in this crisis, that there will be people who kind of, I mean, so many people can just understand what we're saying, right? I mean, it's not like this is news to anybody out there, is it? You know, this is just the reality of our world. We can't really talk about it openly because we're afraid of the consequences. Mm-hmm. Given the fact that we are all on the chopping block and extinction is coming up, hopefully that thought will embolden a lot of people to not worry so much about the charges of anti-Semitism, the charges of hate speech, and will just honestly analyze the world and give information to people that is true without worry about you know, insults and threats being hurled against them, because Tim, time is short here, and we really have to start to organize ourselves if we're going to survive.
Yeah, it's funny how they take something like tolerance and they weaponize it, because in the name of tolerance, they become intolerant of any alternative views, or, you know, like in Europe, they've passed these, in many of the European nations, they've passed laws saying you can't be critical of immigrants or of migrants in the name of tolerance. And of course, what that does is it defangs opposition, or it prevents people from organizing opposition to the sort of this weaponized migration that's been being carried out, you know, well, it's like by many Jewish organizations.
The expression "White Lives Matter."
Yeah,
I mean, it you know, it's hate speech.
Yeah, or it's okay to be white, which is
hate speech.
We talked about that last week.
It's insane.
So what they've done is they've pathologized a completely healthy response to, you know, to aggressive or malicious behavior. Many part, you know, they there's no such thing. Apparently, you know, there's no such thing as cultural aggression or subversion. Well, obviously, anger and outrage is a healthy response to subversion when it's identified. But the subversiveness is when they use these laws, like tolerance laws, and you know, apparently now it's illegal to. This is done back in the 60s when, in England, they passed laws saying you couldn't be critical of immigrants, and this was just the origins of these hate speech laws. Now, so now you can't criticize policy, because if you criticize the effects of mass migration, they interpret it as you being critical of immigrants, being racist. And you're just, you know, acknowledging. The societal effects, the effects of the culture around you by mass migration, which is high crime the reduction of high trust and sort of the erosion of any community.
The desire to hang out with people of your own ethnicity. I mean, remember, come from ethnicities. This is by definition, and sort of a normal historical thing. If that is your perspective, you're not a bad person. It's actually very routine. And yet they have created all of this, you know, these propaganda structures so that you feel terrible expressing it.
Well, here's interesting is how they control free expression largely indirectly mind control. And that was through the control of the narrative, right? Through the their control of the publishing houses, the mainstream media. If you were to look at the names of the people who control the major networks, well, it's Jewish dominated, and so they can control the narrative. But with the advent of the internet and social media, the gatekeepers lost control, and so then they had to start to deal with people talking face to face, directly to one another, peer to peer. With podcast and the internet, and they couldn't control the narrative anymore. Now you see the mailed fist. So now they can no longer afford to be subtle anymore. They have to come down. They have to tell banks to cut off services to people. They have to deplatform people, cut off their own shows, deny you services to these platforms, which were piggybacked on an infrastructure that was paid for by the taxpayer. And in 1996, they got that. In Rule 230, I think it's called, is so they're exempt from any liability for the material that's on the platform, because the whole idea was the audio internet was to promote free expression and free thought. Well, when it got too free and too open, they shut it down. And now they're acting like your publishers. But again, the whole platform the whole infrastructure these platforms rest on were provided by the taxpayer. And so you can make an argument that each and every American is at least a stakeholder, and these are, you know, the equivalent of utilities. And you could very easily pass a law saying that in order to provide these services, whether you're a bank or something, short of someone being convicted of a crime, they can't deny services to you. And, in the name of the First Amendment. But then, at this point, all these advocates of all types of regulation with housing laws and civil rights laws regulating personal behavior. They arrogate themselves the right to tell who you should live next door to, with integration and with public housing and Section 8, and they want to mix things up, and they think they can regulate the employment practices of every, you know, any company over 20 or 50 employees in the name of enforcing civil rights laws. But when you start to, when you say that the First Amendment should be invoked, used against these social, you know, these providers, internet providers or social media platforms, they become tactical libertarians. Oh no, the free market.
Right, exactly.
They're now like, they embrace the free market.
Yeah. They're like quarks. They're like they're material when they want to be, and waves when they need to go in that direction. They can just be either side of it.
But the thing is, they can't contend with a free and open debate. So they never manifest that.
Yeah. Of course not. And so instead of they can't even contest and deal with the bringing up of the question that would lead to free and open debate, because it is extraordinary, isn't it, that with all of the now identifiable destruction that the lockdown has caused, that the effects of the lockdown are not the number one topic in every single media in America today.
Yeah, what about the misery index? Remember that?
Yeah, remember the misery index. The now that it, the state secret of the suicide number, and even on the other side, I would love to actually get into some of the fatalities that they, because remember, one of the things that they use to keep everyone frightened is the death number. Well, they never publish the names of the people who have died, and it's a shame, isn't it? Isn't it a shame? Because then you could do research and you could actually see, well, did the person die? What did the person die of, you see? Mm-hmm. But none of this is possible. We're just living in this dream world of hysteria that, you know, anytime they want to make us more frightened, they can just create another wave of the disease, you know?
Look at YouTube. They say they'll take down any material which contradicts the utterances of some WHO official, World Health Organization official. Well, who the hell is the World Health Organization?
What's Bill Gates?
Who's Bill Gates? Let's look at these organizations. Are these trustworthy people? Are these organizations we should put our blind trust in because they have a record of never being corrupt? I don't think so.
I mean, look, people who listen to our show, I think, are kind of, they know in general this stuff. What has to happen is that everyone who is aware has to start basically spreading the alarm to everyone you know that, look, you may not believe it, but you have to really start thinking clearly and quickly about your circumstance and not let the propaganda get to you, because we are really headed for a slave state at best and starvation at worst. So we have to quickly organize ourselves, and that the first step is just information. We've just got to get more and more people aware that the stories that the government are giving us are nonsense, that they're just nonsense.
I mean, what's happening now is I think a lot of people are being confronted with the ugly reality, is that the illusion that they indulged in, or the way they thought the world worked, is obviously not the case, and there's obviously something going on here, and it's very hard for people to accept that.
It's
because they fear losing something, but you're going to lose it anyways. Like, these businesses that shut down and say, well, if I stay open, they'll take my license. Yeah, but they're putting out of business anyway.
My restaurant in downtown Manhattan won't come back, you know, if I don't accept the COVID narrative. Look, guys. I mean, the cities aren't coming back. It's just impossible. If you look at where we're going to be financially in 6 months, all of the small businesses will basically be evaporated. None of these, because there's just too much downward momentum. It's hard for people to see because the government is printing so much money and everyone is basically having a paid vacation. But the real, the businesses that create employment and freedom and wealth for the vast majority of Americans, they're being destroyed.
Well, the GDP dropped 35%.
Yeah, and the 35% that dropped is all in the businesses that the citizens own. Amazon, Facebook, Apple.
Yeah.
These things aren't, you know, going to zero. you can start to see the relationship to fascism.
Why isn't Donald Trump talking about the economic catastrophe that has been imposed?
Yeah, yeah. You can start to see the brave new world corporations, basically replacing all of the small businesses. I mean, this has been visible for a decade, but now it's really becoming highly profiled because all of the small businesses, the COVID followed with the fake riots, have completely ended their capacity to exist. They wouldn't even know how to organize themselves. I mean, think about some guy who's been driven out. Say he had a grocery store in Manhattan, and his the streets locked down. It's a lot of people have left. There's violence. They're boarded up. What is he going to do? Where is he going to move to in order to reestablish his business? I mean, there are some possibilities, but by and large, these businesses are just gone. And these individuals now are being supported by the state. The state has taken over these relief programs for businesses, for payroll and things. This will all go away.
Well, and they look around you as you're terrified, you're traumatized, you're confused. Yeah. There's been a revolution, and it's, as they say, the revolution won't be televised. And it's occurred all under the guise, of a virus which has a 99.76% survival rate, and that's with the official numbers.
That's right, and that's including all of the people in the in retirement homes that they murdered.
They murdered through neglect. It wasn't the COVID.
Well, they inserted infected people into the homes.
Yeah.
Which is absolute breach of protocol, and it was done for the purpose of creating the bulge of mortality from the disease in April.
It's how you interpret death. You get elderly people who are sick, and you isolate them, and you don't take care of them. They die of something, and they call it COVID. Like I said, I know a guy. There's a guy who was talking, or an author. He said his father was in a retirement home in New Jersey, couldn't visit for several weeks, and the guy, they say he died of COVID, but he died of dehydration.
Yeah, I mean, this is, this is just another.
That was intentional. They were getting the numbers out.
Yeah, this is just a fake, information stream that is done for mass hysteria. Mm-hmm. The public should be starting to wake up. I am seeing a little bit here in Santa Barbara of people that bought into the storyline at first that are now starting to wonder because no one is sick, you see. Even though they have taken something, I once mentioned that the local statistics are great, and they really showed that no one was dying really. They had claimed there was 6 fatalities, but they were all comorbid. But then the local people lost control of the statistics, and now it all comes through the state, and suddenly the death rate goes way up. But
and you just call BS on the whole.
You have to call BS on it because they're not naming any names. You can't really research anyone. Well, who was the person who died? I live in the area. I wanted to research. You can't find it. So these are just ways to keep us frightened so that we believe that the lockdown is for our own good. And as long as there is a majority of the public that feels that way, the revolution will have a hard time, but nevertheless it has to go forward. I don't care if we get to the point where it's just 10%. We have to start fighting back. We have to. Look at the restrictions now that are being established in New York and in Sydney. Mm-hmm. These are not isolated events, and they show you what's going to happen in the future. Maybe not in every state at one time because, they'll keep it confusing, right?
Well, it's like if you're in New York and you go by one of these quarantine checkpoints, you ask the officer, why are you being stopped? And he asks you a question, just invoke your right to remain silent because, that question, none of your business, officer, where are you going? None of your business, officer. Am I being charged anything? Am I being detained? And try that. If everyone they couldn't do it.
Exactly. In other words, if everyone, and this is the kind of rebellion that has to occur, everyone simply has to rebel. We can't cooperate in any way. The governments are not just illegitimate; they are murderous.
The
government has been taken over. Yeah. It is a sick, malevolent organization that has the destruction and extinction of the citizens. Citizens have to do something.
Yeah. People are thinking that if I comply, we'll get over this and we'll get back to normal. If I comply, we'll beat the virus, which is absurd. But I'm saying if I comply, if you comply, it's going to get worse and worse and worse and worse because they'll escalate it.
That's what they're doing.
Just like with schools. Now they're saying that there's restrictions on schools. And so, no, if you own a private school, don't comply. Don't comply. Say, no, we're going to do it this way. This is absurd because there's no science to this. Show me the science for
exactly. Let our people here inside do an internal review and then have a dialogue with you.
Thank you for your advice. Move along now.
And you know what? What's kind of interesting is how the story, the fear of the COVID is going to be jacked up come, you know, the second wave in October. I mean, you wonder if the public is actually going to buy it a second time. I bet you a lot of them will.
Well, in November, you're going to get people getting sick, as they always do, as cold and flu season kick in. Now, it's going to be worse this year because they've isolated people.
Yeah.
Okay. Not to mention the stress and the anxiety they've created. That creates illness in and of itself. So, yeah, but every little sniffle... I'm sorry. It's like right now it's summertime. Guess what? Because people are generally in better health because they're out. The weather's better and they're getting vitamin D and all that. When they get locked in, they get sick again. They become more vulnerable to these things. Again, this goes back to the whole weaponized germ theory, the idea that these little microbes out to get us and get to avoid them, and because we are full of little microbes, any given germs and everything, that we're bioweapons ourselves and we're a threat. So you can't meet and talk to people. You can't look at their faces anymore because they're wearing masks and everyone's a threat to one another. Now, come on, that's basic. It's so obvious psychological warfare. It's absurd.
It is absurd. And
they don't have the body count to justify anything. It's just,
Yeah,
I said if it was bad as they said they did. As bad as they said it was going to be, it still doesn't justify a lockdown because of the collateral damage it was going to cause.
We just didn't understand that the government was actually a secret society. We thought they were real and there was problems with them, but because of the dialectic, you know, we were voting for Hillary or Donald, and we thought democracy had some legitimacy.
Well, obviously the election is irrelevant. Look, this is an election year, for Pete's sake.
Yeah.
And they canceled the Republican National Convention. I think the Democrats are having theirs for some reason, whatever. There's no debates. No one's on a campaign trail. No one's shaking hands. And so, if anything, the election is so irrelevant to this meta event. You know,
what should be the most important election in the history of the country is not even a story in the back pages at this point. There is just no even kind of concern about it. It's 100% COVID hysteria porn all the time, 24/7. There won't be the opportunity for the public to participate, you know, with questions about whether or not the lockdown is a good idea. Look, it's never going to be something that we can use mainstream media to engage in.
Well, here's what happened.
I mean, it's axiomatic.
What's clear now is that throughout the country, in the several states, local, and this, you got this with Agenda 21 and how this is implemented through ICLEI, the international International Coalition of Local Initiatives or something.
Yeah.
And also with the Strong Cities Initiatives and with the Soros Network, we talked about this, how Open Society Foundation, the whole country, state, local governments, sustainable communities, if you live in a sustainable community, it's been infiltrated. Apparently, state governments, local governments have been infiltrated for years with these agents of influence or agents of foreign interest, where there's the Soros, the financial powers, and they're now implementing these things. They're there to implement, whether it's Lightfoot in Chicago or that prosecutor down in St. Louis, or the the U.S., I guess the Attorney General of New York, I think is a Soros agent, is that these are agents of discord, and the various governors. These are wolves that are devouring their states now. And they're acting on the interest of foreign interests now. They should be identified as enemies of the people and dislodged from power. Because they're far beyond any constitutional mandate or authorization for their activities. So what legitimacy do they have? Other than they're just ensconced in office and they're taking up space. And they have inertia behind them. But they have no justification, no legal justification.
One thing that maybe we should talk about in the coming weeks is what kind of pamphleteering we can start to try to do. Mm-hmm. Because we need to basically set up our storyline in a bullet point way that people can just create pamphlets and start handing them out. Mm-hmm. We should have 100 million pieces of paper with our arguments and our understanding of what's going on. They should just be everywhere, because a lot of people will say, "Oh, it's conspiracy theory," but those whose minds are still working, and I think more people will start to, the propaganda will be contestable when the hunger starts, and so before that there should be 100 million pieces of paper with a summation of what we have to do in order to survive. The government is illegitimate. It has to be removed. Mm-hmm. Period. There's no option. If we accept this structure, we will be killed. It's that simple.
It's almost as if the country's been invaded.
We have been invaded. And we've been captured and placed into a slave camp. Mm-hmm. We don't understand it yet, but we're about to. So it's time for the pamphlets to go out. If you're inspired, or if you think what we're describing is real, I know this will make people move outside of their comfort zone, because pamphleteering is something that Americans don't really engage in, unfortunately, anymore. But we need to start doing it, because there will not be any capacity in the mainstream media to have discussions about this. They will never.
It's not even. I was just talking about today. This is not even discussed in the media. It's not a political issue. The economy is collapsing.
I know.
You have tens of millions of people unemployed. You have a 35% drop in the gross domestic product. In one quarter, and they're talking about passing stimulus. Where are they getting this money if the economy is collapsing? They're just printing it. And it's not even a discussion. And in the meantime, Mitch McConnell's wearing a mask, strutting around Capitol Hill.
Right. And so you'll see that in the coming months, the dollar will basically collapse. Obviously, all of the fiat currencies are going to start to collapse. And you're also going to see at some point the internet go away, mm-hmm. or be dramatically reduced to just a few channels that they will control. But there won't be emails, there won't be the capacity to communicate by the citizen. So we will be left with nothing but pamphlets.
Well, no, Fauci will say that actually the COVID virus spreads on emails. And
yeah.
I can't, he's a doctor, he's the expert. So.
Well, I mean, hate speech spreads on emails. And so we have to anticipate the future as being pretty bleak in terms of opportunities to discuss using mainstream media. It just isn't going to be happening. We need to pamphleteer to explain to the public that the people in the mainstream media are malevolent lifetime actors. They are not there to give you reality. You are confused, because the Americans will have to go through this process. They thought that, this was like the land of the free and the home of the brave, and now suddenly they woke up in the Soviet Union. It's a tough transition. Mm-hmm. But we have to find a way to help speed it up.
Well, they got that way by complying. Alexander Solzhenitsyn said in his book, I think it's Gulag Archipelago, he comments that early on, when the NKVD showed up to haul people away, if everyone in the apartment complex would just come out with their forks and knives and bludgeon the three or four agents doing it, they never could have done it.
Exactly right. And,
you know, and so it's compliance. It's people are isolated. People are atomized and fearful. And one thing I think is you're not alone out there. And there's tens of millions of people who agree with you, who are just as concerned.
What we need are a few of these apparatchiks, the guys who are trying to enforce the illegitimate restrictions, unconstitutional restrictions of movement and things. We just need a few of them swept away by
crowds. Yeah, routed and
by crowds that just overwhelm them and push them aside.
Because that will send a message down. I mean, that's so frustrating because let's say your position like president. Now, obviously presidents are selected and they're not really that powerful, but they do have potential power. So if a president's willing to take a risk and do decisive actions, he can make a difference. It's just a question of, at this point, what's it all for? If you're just going to, unless you're, that's your role to begin with. I don't know. You're malicious to begin with. I don't know. But, you are sworn to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States. When you're confronted with the situation where you have, three dozen governors violating the Constitution of the United States, violating people's civil liberties, imposing a dictatorship, what do you do? Do you declare an insurrection? Because I think you could be covered by the Insurrection Act. But that's expecting too much. It's not going to come from above. That's the problem. So.
Well, the insurrection is a stage that we aren't ready to get to. We need to have the organization of the proletariat occur.
Mm-hmm. I'm saying that people who pretend to be in power are the insurrectionists.
Of course. I mean, they have successfully overcome and destroyed the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is just so much unconstitutional.
I thought it would be like a war, or a meteorite, or a catastrophe. This is a complete fake catastrophe. A lousy little bug that may or may not exist. That even by their own numbers,
the public is too afraid to even question it. It's because they have been so successful with the video media, which comes out.
The function of the masks and shutting down events. The effect proving the cause. And it's got to be bad because there's no baseball, that there wasn't baseball. And then now there is baseball, and they have, cardboard cutout fans, and there's fake cheering.
Yeah. So that's our world. But it's a platform from which Americans should be open to some new ideas about their government.
It's about time.
It's about time. I don't know how long the process will go on. I mean, when you look at Sydney and Melbourne, I mean, they could start the starvation,
year. Respirators and goggles would be a good, see if they can go that far.
That would be a sign that the end is near.
People actually wearing a respirator and a goggles around their eyes because Anthony Fauci said, why not?
The local politicians have been playing it up that, these cloth masks don't really work and you're a terror bioweapon and you really need something that controls the virus as you...
What do you mean by working? Because, there's not exactly a lot of people dropping dead or getting really sick. So what do they mean? Test results.
Yeah.
Now, apparently the people participating in tests are plummeting. And now we need to keep on testing because we need those numbers. But by the way, states get paid for every COVID test they get.
Right.
From the HHS. So that's a scam in and of itself. I mean,
well,
and their idea of a case is someone tests positive.
Here's a story that should have been, national news. They should have done serologic studies over the last couple of months to determine what fraction of the different state populations have actually been exposed to COVID. Because some of the models, have said, well, maybe it's like 80-85%. But you see, this would, of course, completely get rid of the rationale for the lockdown. Because, we've already had it. You see,
we're supposed to be exposed to these things,
exactly.
Aren't we?
But
aren't we? Right? It's called an immune system. That's how we.
But these studies aren't even in the news at this point. Yeah. They just keep talking about the second wave and the spike in
well, because if 80% have been exposed to it, whatever it is, and what it is it's a coronavirus, which. You know, again, the test is they take they identify a genetic RNA sequence, and it's similar to SARS-CoV-1, so they call it SARS-CoV-2, and then they say, well, it may cause this because it's very mystical and very inaccurate, very sloppy actually if you look into it. But again, if that is indeed the case, that the vast majority of the public has been exposed, as they should, by the way, because we're exposed to things all the time, and we don't turn up sick. Is that would do away with any justification for an emergency vaccine because you don't need it. And again, if I'm looking at a 99.76% survival rate, why the hell do you need a vaccine, which is they call it a vaccine, but really it's a toxin, some genetic weird thing's going to screw with your genes, genetic modification or something, genetic therapy. But why would you have any emergency use for this stuff if you have such a low mortality rate? You know, the question answers itself. It's a scam.
Of course. And they're going to lock people down. It's an excuse to lock them down if they refuse. And if they take...
Yeah. I mean, if people walk around masked, oh, there's something out there, so we need a vaccine so I don't have to wear a mask anymore. That's not going to end either, by the way. So.
No.
You know, same with immunity passports, whereas, well, wait a second. What if I'm immune? What if I'm fine today but not tomorrow? What if I'm not infected today? I mean, it's just... none of this makes any sense, you know, because again,
it's absurd. What are you going to do with your immunity passport if there's no airlines and you can't travel to the States and you can't even go out of your borough? You're going to use your immunity passport to visit your next door neighbor?
Yeah, I had someone who's going on an airline. He didn't want to put a mask on so he can claim exemption. But the guy who ran the airline said that anyone who doesn't cooperate would put on a no fly list. And I said, well, that's no problem because in a few months, no one's going to be flying anyway because the economy is going to be destroyed.
Well, the airline, believe me, the airlines are just dead as doornails.
But they're being bailed. I mean, it turns out if you do the study, John Rapport did that, how it's Vanguard and what's the other three hedge funds that control 40% of these industries, how they're all tied in with the medical industrial complex. And these industries aren't producing anything, but the people in charge are being bailed out.
Right.
Meaning, so they don't care. You see, no, it's not like these are businesses that need to do. They're not, I need to make a business, be in business, so it's not like you think they'd resist. This is why they didn't resist. And this goes back to the whole money control of finance. They're being bailed out, you know, being paid to keep the economy not working, to keep people unemployed.
Exactly right.
So.
So, all right, okay, Joe. Well, let's get them next week. Let's hope there is more protest this coming week because we need everyone.
Yes.
Talk.
Okay, Joe. Great weekend.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.